And now we'll continue to work on.
Thank you, Laurie.
Questions that are asked. Thank you. I was asked, what is the difference between restricting specific food items as part of a plan of eating and restricting my eating as an anorexic would do? The words are the same, but I would say that it's very different. An anorexic would abstain from restricting eating in the way that he or she does, or would adopt a plan of eating that involved eating food and as opposed to not eating food. You know, maybe the anorexic and especially the bulimic might also do an analysis of if the anorexic has been bulimic or has been a compulsive eater as well, has eaten, not a compulsive eater, a compulsive overeater, has binged, the anorexic might very well want to analyze his or her foods and to see whether there were some things that caused that caused cravings. It's a very complex issue, but, you know, there are a lot of people, I won't say there are a lot, there are people who would restrict their eatings as their solution to their sense of their problem is that they overeat everything. And if they can do an analysis to figure out that they're not overeating everything, they're overeating some things, they get cravings for some things, then maybe that might make them freer to eating other things. It's not true for all anorexics. Sometimes it might just be the eating behavior of anorexia, which comes out, the eating behavior coming from anorexia. So you would restrict, you would not restrict your eating as opposed to restricting it. When I talked about restricting specific food items, restricting to that would be abstaining from, is what I meant anyway. I hope that answers the question. I'm not sure it does, but if the person who asked it wants to talk to me about it, be happy to do that. Just want to check to see. I'm going to disappear for a second. Okay, we're not quite at step four, so I've got a whole bunch of stuff to hand out for step four. If anyone's interested, there is a wonderful book that's been published, which it's called The Book That Changed the World? No, it wouldn't be that. The Book That Started It All. The Book That Started It All. And what it is the annotated manuscript of the first draft of the big book that was given to the printer for creating the big book. So it shows the manuscript, and then it shows all the changes that were both agreed to, not agreed to, all the suggested changes to the original manuscript. And it's really interesting, and I've been able to, at one point, many of these pages were put on the internet, so I copied them and I'll pass them around. It's fascinating to see.
Is that the one that was published by Hazelden?
It's published by Hazelden. It's a wonderful book. The book that started it all.
The AA office also sells what they call...
Oh, the AA office sells the manuscript.
Yeah, the original lithograph.
The original lithograph.
Doesn't have the scrawls.
It doesn't have the scrawls on it. Yeah, so the AA central office sells the original, a copy of the original manuscript as it was sent out to 400 people, the AA members at the time, plus, clergy and psychologists and doctors and they all came back with comments. But the copy they sell doesn't have the comments on it. The book that started it all has the comments. And then, you can also get a reproduction of the first edition of the big book, which differs quite a bit from the original one. Does anyone have it here? Or? No, the copy of the first edition has the original cover called the circus cover. It's yellow and red. Certainly not very anonymous. it's called the big book because when they originally sold it, they were selling it for $3, which is a lot of money for a book, and they used the cheapest, thickest paper so it would be big, and alcoholics would think they were getting value for their money. And it's true. And this version that AA sells is printed on that cheap paper, so it's a big book. The pagination was different, and I can't remember the figure, something like there are 66 changes or something like that, little ones here and there in the wording. You know, it's wonderful to compare them all. What has that got to do? Oh, okay. So I was going to take you through briefly those passages in the big book talking about the self-will run riot, the aspect of us in which we want our will to be in charge. And page 60, if you remember, if you're not being convinced, we were at step 3. And I was asked to be a little slower in pointing, and to be more particular in pointing out where we are on the page. So it's page 60. It's the second last paragraph. I read it just before we ended. It begins, being convinced. So being convinced, we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? So the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. We're talking about turning our will over. A little later on, we'll be talking about turning our life over. And then they'll be saying what we do. Because that's what they said. What do we mean by that, and what do we do? So the first part is to explain what we mean by turning our life over. Now, the big book is clear that we do not turn our life over by doing step 3. We make a decision to turn our life over by doing step 3. And steps 4 through 9 is what turns it over. And that's why there are no promises in step 3 other than we will have an effect, sometimes a great one. So we may not have, we will most often not have, we will have a feel an effect, but it won't be a great one. Sometimes it'll be a great one. That's it. And I'll show you as we go on. So we're dealing, first of all, with will. So the first requirement that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. We're always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. So the big book is already setting up a situation in which our wish to be in charge of life does not require bad motives. It could be the best of motives. Could be the worst, but it could be the best. And I think that fits many of us in this program. Many of us are people pleasers. Many of us are martyrs, at least in our own minds. And many of us have indeed suffered a great deal at the hands of others. We have. I mean, that's at least anecdotally, but I don't know how you would develop statistics on this, but boy, especially the women in this program, whom I've met in this program, who have suffered at the hands of a lot of men, is unbelievable to me and very humbling to me, because I've been so lucky as not to have suffered in that way. So your motive in not wanting people to suffer and not wanting bad things to happen to others is a good motive. It's just not, you know. And they talk about, you're like the actor wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, the rest of the players in his own way. Page 61. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. And I make this joke, but I think it's true, that if you asked anyone who knew me before I joined this program whether I was kind, considerate, patient, generous, and that modest and self-sacrificing, other than my family, okay, but everyone else who knew me, I believe that other than the modesty part, because I don't think I was a very modest person, they would have thought I was kind, considerate, patient, generous, and self-sacrificing. I think they would have thought that. I don't know if that was true necessarily, but that's the image I had that I projected. On the other hand, he may be, you know, the joke about, I used to be conceited, but I got over that, now I'm perfect. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest, but as with most humans, he's more likely to have varied traits. So the picture that they're drawing is of a person who, for whatever motives, want things to go his or her way. Okay? Sometimes for good reasons, sometimes for bad reasons. What usually happens? Sometimes for a mixture. What usually happens, the show doesn't come off. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes on the next occasion, and this is interesting, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Many of us, because of the way women are brought up in our society, where they're not taught to be assertive, or where an assertive woman is called aggressive, you know, that kind of societal norms, and assertive men are just assertive. Very often, women will not come off as demanding, they'll come off as gracious. You know, that's just the roles that people have played in the way our society has worked. But I would say for me that I would pride myself on not demanding anything, but I would be loving and gracious and accepting, and then try to mold things my way in a nicer way. Still, the play doesn't suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he's sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. And these are all different emotions, and it's not that you have necessarily all of them. You may be just self-pitying. Poor me, life isn't going the way I want it to. Indignant, why isn't life going the way I want it? And angry is, you know, damn it, life has to go the way I want it. You know, I mean, it's sort of like it's just a spectrum of emotions that you may have only a few of. Then they say, what is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? So self-seeking has more of this concept of, I want what I want, even if trying to be kind. I want my way. Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can rest meaning grab, satisfaction, happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Isn't it evident all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants, and don't his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Isn't he, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? The big book is using a lot of different words to describe this wish to be in charge. Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. Well, they used to in 1939. I don't think anyone uses the word egocentric these days. He's like the retired businessman who lies about in luxury in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. Not a very nice person. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, a well-meaning person. Politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world, on page 62 now, if the rest of the world would only behave. Now, I don't know what you think of politicians. My dad was a politician for 28 years, and I read that as, because I knew him. I knew him extremely well as a person who looks for the good in others. At least that's the politicians I grew up with. The outlaw safecrack who thinks society has wronged him. The hypocrite, the self-pitying person. And the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, or our self-pity? Selfishness, self-centeredness. And you now see that the word selfish is used in a much broader context from what it is in the dictionary. In the dictionary, selfish is clearly wanting things for my own good and my own happiness. You know, I'm taking this, you can't have it, that's selfish. I want this, is selfish. But in the big book, the word selfish is clearly used in a much broader sense of meaning wanting my way, regardless of the motivation. So that you can be selfish by not wanting torture to exist in this world. Even though there's no way that the dictionary would support that definition of the use of the word selfish. Some people have real trouble with the word selfish in this context, but it's very important because the word selfish is used in step 4. And if we don't understand how the big book uses the word selfish, then we're not going to understand how it applies to those of us who have been victims, or those of us who have the best of motives about life. So, except for the moment, what I think I've been able to show you is that selfish clearly is used in the big book to describe a person who wants his or her way rather than God's way, regardless of the motivation. And forgive the use of the word God. Wants something to happen that isn't happening. Wants reality not to exist. Wants a different kind of reality. And that's a form of selfishness which goes beyond the dictionary definition, way beyond the dictionary definition. And I'm going to suggest when we get to step four, and I haven't done this before, I just started to do with some sponsees, that the word selfish in the step four, maybe it would be easier for some people to use the word self-willed, because sometimes the word selfish gets them onto the wrong track. Anyway, I want to get to this sense because it's easily misunderstood. Driven by a hundred forms, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by a hundred forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. And then comes this sentence. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we always find that at some time in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. That is an easily misunderstood sentence. You know, I was dressed too provocatively and that's why I was sexually assaulted. There's no way that the big book would have said that, or would have made it, but that's what it sounds like. And here's what Charlie explains, and I think it's a great explanation. He said something like this. He said, when I was 8 years old, my father beat me black and blue. No child deserves to be beaten black and blue. But if 50 years later, after my father is still dead, he's still beating me up in my mind, then clearly at some time in the past, I made a decision to continue to be hurt. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It certainly makes sense to me. And you might say, but it's not a decision. I just am dwelling over this. It's just something that's going on. We'll deal with that in step four. But just rest assured, I hope, that the big book would never stand for the proposition that you deserve all you get. You know, it couldn't say that. It would be wrong. And I think Charlie's explanation is very valuable. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Someone described that as eye trouble. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. Again, selfishness is self-will, wanting to be in charge of life regardless of the motivation. We must, or it kills us, God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. That's the end of the will description, turning our will over. Our will doesn't work. We had to find a way to do the will of our higher power. People will say, how can truth, love, justice have will? I'll talk about that. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, now we're talking about life, turning our will, turning our life over. God was going to be our director. He's the principal. We are his agents. He's the father and we are his children. You can imagine how open I was to words like that. And they took out of the manuscript. The manuscript said, get that simple relationship straight. Boy, am I glad they took that one out. But the idea was that we are going to be guided by our higher power. And I was going to turn my life over to my higher power. So I understand that. I translated it. I'm turning my life over to truth, love, justice, and beauty. I have to turn my will over to truth, love, justice, and beauty in the sense that I have to believe that these enduring deep values of mine will guide my actions and my thinking better than my wish to have things go my way, which are often mixed in how they come out. And the big book says this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Somewhere. We have a picture of the arch. I don't know where it is. Oh, here it is. It's on the top shelf, right. So this is the arch to freedom, and the big book has this metaphor of the arch, and we've reached the keystone part. So pass it on. The concept is we're building an arch through which we pass to freedom. The keystone is the is the stone that's right in the middle of the arch that holds all the other stones up. So the keystone is this simple idea of turning our life over. Now on page 63, is the first paragraph that implies, and people read it this way, that these are the promises of step three. They're not. They're the promises of the steps. When we sincerely took such a position, steps 4 to 12, I would say, well, not I would say, Joe and Charlie say, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I mean, look at the language. We had a new employer, and we don't get our job description until page 102 after we've recovered. You know, we don't know what we're here on life for until we're recovered and able to do God's will, our higher power's will. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him, 4 to 11, and performed his work well, 12. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. It's very important that you take that as the promises of the whole program. Because if you look for these promises to come true before you go on to step four, you'll be on step three forever. If these promises came true at step three, why in the world will we go on to steps 4 through 12? If all we had to do was make a decision, and then suddenly all these wonderful things happen, we're abstinent, everything's wonderful, why would there be 9 more steps? And I'll give you other proofs that this is the fact, but before I do that, I will tell you a story, a few jokes. Man sitting on his front porch on the plains of Kansas. Kansas? Yeah, they have floods in Kansas, don't they? Flash floods? Yeah. And a police car drives up and says, Frank, you got to get off that porch. There's going to be a flash flood here. It's going to go higher than your roof. Get in. We'll bring you to safety. No thanks. I've made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I'm protected. Flood comes. It's up to the second story. He's looking out the second story. A boat comes by. Get in, Frank. It's going to get higher. No, I've made my decision to turn my will and my life over to care of God. He's on the roof, hanging on by the old television antenna. Helicopter comes, throws down a ladder. Get in, Frank. It's going higher than the roof. Oh, I've made my decision to turn my will and my life over. He drowns, goes to heaven, brushes past St. Peter. I want to speak to the big guy. Gets an audience with God. He says, where the hell were you? God says, I sent you a police car, I sent you a boat, and I sent you a helicopter. What do you want? That's a guffaw and a half. Okay, we'll see if we can up the ante here. A guy like Sergeant Snorkel in Beetle Bailey, you know, is hanging on to the edge of a cliff, to the one twig that's sticking out. He says, oh God, I've never prayed before, but if there is a God, please help me now. I'm here, my son. God? Is that you? Yes, my son. Oh, God, what's going to happen? I don't know what to do. I've got this twig, and it's gradually coming out. What do I do? Let go of the twig. Pardon me? Let go of the twig, my son. Is there anyone else up there? That self will run riot. And my favorite joke... which you can make much longer, but I'll make it short. A guy is a very wonderful, religious, deeply spiritual man, is on the board of a charity that's very important to him and very important in the town he lives in. And sadly, the executive director of the charity steals the money from the place and goes off. And he knows that over a period of a year, they could get their money back, but if they don't get money right away, the charity will just go kaplooey and it will no longer exist. So on a Monday, he's in his bedroom, he gets on his knees, he says, God, I'm not praying for myself, I'm praying for this charity. I need to win $100,000 in the lottery. I just need the first two numbers. I don't play lotteries. Is two numbers enough to get you 100,000? I just need two numbers or three numbers. And it's not, doesn't go to me, it goes to this charity, you know how important it is. And I'm going to eat bread and water only, I'm going to pray 18 hours a day. And the lottery's on Saturday. So you can make it much longer by talking about every day, but it's Saturday. And he's been doing this for the whole week, praying and praying. And he's on his knees and he's praying and he says, God, just 3 more hours and, you know, I'm asking is for 100. I don't need the $1 billion. I don't need the mega. I just need the $100,000 to keep this wonderful charity charity going. He's praying. And it's a beautiful sunny day outside. And suddenly clouds come in from nowhere. Black clouds that completely block off the sun. Completely. It's so dark that the street lights go on. Dogs howl. It's a frightening moment. There's sort of thunder, but no lightning, this ominous sounds. And suddenly, a shaft of sunlight streams right onto his face, and a frustrated, exasperated voice says, "Buy a ticket!" Now, I believe that's step three. Step three is a decision. Oh, you know, the three frogs on the log, and one decides to jump off. How many frogs are left? All three, they only made a decision. You know, that... So the big book's directions for doing step three, because remember, we did life, we did will, now we're doing directions, are right here. They're right in the middle on page 63, but just go to the paragraph below. There's a prayer to be said. It says, "We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor, sponsors. But it's better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we express the idea, voicing without reservation. First time I said it, I changed the these and thous to you. It's the best I could do. I don't care anymore. This is only beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once." That's the step three promise. An effect was felt at once, and sometimes a very great one. But here's the prayer. And it used to say in the manuscript, "Get down on your knees and say to your maker." Boy, I'm glad they changed that one. Although, I must tell you, there are times I get on my knees. Not often, but I do. Because it's an aspect of humility. Anyway, let's just say it together. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, may I do thy will always. It's just a prayer, but it's a fascinating prayer to look at. It is the first intimation, really, in this book, that our job is going to be to help others. And that the only way out of our disability is to devote our lives to helping others. And that's our disability. Other people can afford to be angry, can afford to feel resentments, can afford to spend a lot of time on themselves. But the big book says very clearly, if we're going to survive and be sober or be abstinent, we've got to think of others much more than of ourselves. It also take away the these and thous and all that. I offer myself to thee to save my soul, to save myself, no, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self so I won't be self-centered, no, so I may better do your will. Take away my difficulties so I won't have difficulties, no, so victory over them will bear witness to others, people I'd help, of the power and the love and the way of life of God. And if you ever needed proof that step three was not a significant step, other than a moment in time. Remember, it was added to this by Bill. There were 6 steps originally. This wasn't one of them. All you have to do is look at the next few words. On the bottom of page 63, the top of page 64. Next, we launched out. To launch is to propel with great force on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which none of us had never attempted. Though our decision, anytime the big book uses the word decision from now on, it means step three, the step three prayer. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. What are the things in ourselves? We'll find out that they are character defects. Blocking us from what? From the sunlight of the Spirit, from our deepest values. The blockage metaphor is kept up from the chapter We Agnostics. The obscuring by calamity, pomp, and worship of other things. This whole image of the drain cleaner, the plunger, the whole image of keeping the pipeline clean and open is right there. So step three may be vital and crucial, but it doesn't have any permanent effect unless at once followed by strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in our lives which have been blocking us. We'll see that facing and being rid of is a combination of steps 4 through 9, not just step 4. Even though the word inventory is used only to this, in the steps as written on the wall, we'll see what it means. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. Starting is step 4, not finishing. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. So they're using the analogy of a business inventory. I don't know how many of you have ever been involved in business inventory. I was when I was 16 years old, and I wasn't in charge of it. I was just counting. But a business inventory, it's a fact-finding, searching, and fact-facing, fearless, right? You face facts, you're fearless, you're searching, you're fact-finding. It's an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. Now, a commercial inventory is, what is our stock right now? How are we doing compared to last year? What's selling well? What's not selling well? What should we get rid of? What should we keep? What do we need more of? Only one of the objects of a commercial inventory is the one that the big book is about to concentrate on. One object, it goes on, is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly, and clearly the implication is, in order to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly without regret. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. There will not be a next or a second. The big book leaves a lot of dangling firsts in its wake. But we will see that first we search them out, and then in steps 4 and 5, we'll search them out. In 6, 7, 8, and 9, we get rid of them. So that the inventory process or process is steps 4 through 9. We have to face and to be rid of. We don't get rid of them by identifying them. We identify them. We face them. That's steps 4 and 5. And then we get rid of them through 6, 7, 8, and 9. And that's important as well to understand, because the inventory in step 10, we will find out, is steps 4 through 9. But I'll discuss that later, much later on tonight, or maybe tomorrow. Today, or maybe tomorrow. So the first thing we're doing is step 4. First, we search out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Okay. I'm going to go through the big book, but I'm going to hand out forms that were developed by Blaine, this AA guy in Winnipeg, and used with his permission. They're available at oabigbook.info. As a matter of fact, you can even use them on their PDF, their forms which can be filled in, their PDF documents, and you can actually fill them in. I don't necessarily encourage you to do that, but you can do that. So I'm going to pass out the forms after I give you an overview. Sure. Okay, so these are the instructions. So resentments, sex conduct, and fears.
And there is a...
That's the step 8 and 9.
Okay, so it's this one here.
Yeah. So, okay, don't do it yet.
Okay,
Yes. Okay. So here's the overview. Well, while Kika is and Renee and Monica?
Monique.
Passing them out. Here's the overview. What you're going to be getting are copies of 3 forms and an overall suggested outline for thinking about how to fill them out. And you can read that at your leisure, but these forms basically follow as much as possible, and I think pretty carefully, the instructions in the big book. They are solely big book forms. Those of you who know Joe and Charlie, and those of you who know other methods of doing the steps, even if they look a lot like the big book, they have things added to them. Joe and Charlie bring in concepts from the AA 12 and 12. Their fear form and their sex conduct form are the same as the resentment form. The Big Book does different things. So I'm going to give you the overview. And I've got to tell you, it's taken me a long time to understand this overview, and it makes me appreciate the brilliance and the artistic inspiration of Bill Wilson, because I don't know if Bill had any idea of how tight this was going to be. Basically, we have a resentment form. That resentment form will start with the things that bother us in life and will end up with identifying four character defects. Selfish, or self-willed, if you want. Dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. We will then deal with each of those character defects using the next two forms. The next form is fear. Fear will deal with the frightened aspect of our character defects. We will write down our fears, and we will end up with outgrowing them by asking ourselves a very clear question. What would my higher power have me be in relation to that fear? So at once, the Big Book promises, we will begin to outgrow the fears that we have identified as one of our character defects in the resentment form. And then in the sex conduct form, we will take difficult relationships in which the body and the mind are talking at the same time, and we will deal with selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate, which is self-seeking. I'll talk about that. And so the next three character defects will be dealt with. We'll start off with how we've harmed individuals in relationships and end up seeing where we went wrong and what we should have done instead. In other words, how we could, in those difficult relationships, have been unselfish, honest, and thinking of others, considerate of others, and not self-seeking. So that by the time we finish step four, we will already have been given a picture of, A, what our character defects are, only four of them, big, huge character defects, but only four, and also be able to have seen how we can live our lives without them as whole human beings. And that's all step four, and you can do it in a week if you want. And it's absolutely amazing to see how simple it is. Most of it doesn't require a lot of thinking. It requires you just to write down what's on your mind. Some of it will require thinking, and some of it may require collaboration with a sponsor or someone experienced within the program to help you fill in some of the blanks that may be left. At step five, to help you fill in some of the blanks that you couldn't fill in step four. But it is mind-blowing how simple it is compared to so many other things. And the wonderful thing about it, there are a lot of wonderful things about it. One is, because you have only four, and because they come out in so many different ways, and you see how the same patterns show up in all the things that bother you about your life, you will be so ready at step six and seven to have them removed from him that you will whiz through six and seven. And that's the experience of, am I right? Has anyone used these forms and not wanted to get rid of the character defects? I don't think so. How many people have used these forms? Yeah, well, at least 20. And not one of these people has ever not wanted to whiz through step six and seven. Second, you will not be feeling bad about yourself, because you will know how you can live a better life. You won't feel like I'll be the hole in the donut, or if I get rid of this, where will I be in all this? My personality is connected to it. There's such deep character defects, and the picture that you will get from working through your fears and your sex conduct will show you how you can live a life so different that it's just around the corner for you, that you'll be willing to go on to make your amends very quickly. And you won't feel bad about yourself. You will feel good that you have been given an opportunity that most people don't get in this life, to recreate yourself, to transform yourself, to make up for the harms that you've done to others. And that's a gift that very few people get in this world. People who've done harm very often continue to do harm, and thus harm themselves, harm their soul or whatever they are, and become people who are incorrigible, who can never change. And how pathetic that what could have been a whole human being is now a person who is so diminished in capacity that he or she is no longer capable of changing. You can change. And you will see that. I'm in awe of this. And I know you could do it. You could do it in 24 hours. I wouldn't necessarily suggest that, but you could. And the other beautiful part is when we reach step five, after you finish sharing it with another human being, you're actually given a checklist of things you should be feeling. And if you don't feel them, well, you left something out. Go back and there are a few things you might want to put down. So that you're given even a guide to how well you did step four. And I can tell you, because of that, because you're given this checklist at step five, you don't have to write down your entire life from womb to, you know, to the present time. You know, it's all done in shorthand, it's all done quickly, and yet it's very, very thorough. So I happen to like this. Like is not the word. I have tremendous admiration for it and experience with it, and it has never served me wrong. In step 10, I would say that steps 4 through 9 are repeated in the context of recovery. I'll talk about that later. I have never had to make a decision in which I have... double negatives. I have always used step 10 to make difficult decisions, and I've never been steered wrong. I've made mistakes, but I've never been steered wrong. And it's a wonderful gift to have this. I have not yet read an AA historian who can point to where these forms came from. There may be somewhere, and there may be in some forgotten piece of Oxford group literature that not everyone is aware of. But I've never had anyone be able to say where this came from. Now, the other thing I want to say before we go into more detail is that this was written by people who did harm to others. And so a lot of the examples they're going to use are examples in which the harm they did was obvious and they want to make up for it. So many of us have suffered cruelly at the hands of others. And yet we will find that we have the same character defects even though we've been victims rather than victimizers. But I want to tread so carefully on this, but I can't leave this untalked about or not talked about. I have not suffered sexual or physical abuse as a child or as an adult. There are people I'm sure in this room who have. I have sponsored many, and I have many friends in this program who have suffered those horrible tragedies. And they have all been able to overcome them using the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. So I will be giving you their experience, strength and hope, and the way that they were able to use the instructions of the Big Book, even though they were not designed with this in mind, to use the instructions of the Big Book to come out from the other side. And there will be a lot of emotions, and I want to preface it so much with how in awe I am of people who have overcome these things, because I've never had to overcome them. Okay. Well, resentment, they say on page 64, last paragraph, resentment is the number one... I'm sorry. First, we search out the flaws... I'm sorry, just above that. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure, being convinced that self manifested, showing itself in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations. So we were convinced by the discussion in step 3 about wanting our way, self-will. All right, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From its stem, all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Okay. First of all, I want to start off with a proposition that isn't exactly in accord with the words of the Big Book, but I believe is in the spirit of the Big Book. This was written by people who got angry, by men who were full of anger. The reaction of a lot of people to the same frustrations that life doesn't go their way is not necessarily anger. It can be self-pity, it can be frustration, it can be isolation, it can be, abnegation, just giving up completely. Whatever it is, in the core meaning of the word resentment, there is a concept that goes beyond anger. Resentment certainly includes anger, but it can also include anything that you think about that bothers you. The Latin phrase is, the Latin words that comes from are re, meaning again, and sentire, meaning to feel. So resentment is something that you feel over and over again. It's with the what-ifs and the if-onlys of your life in relation to people and institutions and principles. I'll talk about what that means. And so even though the big book uses the word angry twice in this paragraph, I urge you, because especially in OA, to consider the ideas in the big book of resentment as being anything that bothers you, that's on your mind now. Okay? And we'll see other words in the big book that will contribute to what I'm just talking about. Okay? So, the big book then has some pretty clear instructions, and they seem to be clear, and yet I gotta tell you, my first sponsor, bless his soul, didn't understand them. And he was an AA as well as OA. And he gave me, luckily his step five with me was very powerful, but it was 6-7 hours long instead of the 2 or 3 hours that step fives that I do now take. Because he had to fill in all the areas that were left out. And the big book says these are the things that you must do, and they're in an order. First, we listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. And I urge you not to just confine yourself to anger, but anything that bothers you that's on your mind, that you're feeling and thinking about. Not something you're not thinking about, but something that is on the top of your mind that bothers you. So you will have this sheet, and you can see the sheet. The first column on the resentment form, it's got some problems in what it looks like. There's a small box and a big box. The small box is where you write out the resentment, but the big box is the whole row.
Do you have a visual?
I have, thanks. And if you go to oabigbook.info, you can download examples of how to fill it out. Okay, and I've got that right here. So here's the form, and I hope you all have it. And so this first column is you list the people, institutions, and principles that bother you. People, obvious. It could be something as deep and traumatic as the person who abused you, and something as minor or silly as the person who parked over the line in the parking lot. It could be, as it was for me, Hitler. And it could also be, as it was for me, an ex-girlfriend that I thought about when I was younger. It could be politicians. It could be specific politicians, specific talk show hosts, specific people in your life or specific people around your life. Anything that's on your mind. I had a sponsee who has said to me, 20 years ago I was raped, I went through 10 years of therapy, I'm over it, doesn't bother me, doesn't think about me, I know what happened to the perpetrator, he's out of my mind, do I put him down? And I hope my answer was as clear as it is now, but I think it might have been. I said, you will know at step five whether you've left anything out. If you aren't thinking about it, don't put it down. Because the promises at the end of step five or at a certain point in step five are clear. If you feel them, you didn't leave it out. And that's what happened. She didn't have to put it down. It's what's on your mind right now. But be honest about what's on your mind. You may not really recognize how many people really bother you. Or maybe you do. So the first thing you do is you go down the column. You don't go across. You go down, and you may have to make 30 or 40 or 50 copies of what you've got, or you may just use a piece of paper and just subdivide it into columns. I use a piece of paper now because I've got the thing memorized. I don't need the printed form. And someday I'll put together a form that is just a form and doesn't have all the wording in it. So people are people. Institutions are collections of people whose names you don't know, or who act in a corporate way, in a collection way. So, for my first step four, I wrote down members of my family. I wrote down, ex-girlfriend or two. I wrote down people I had harmed, including one or two of my ex-girlfriends. Co-workers, Hitler, a lawyer who had betrayed my trust, some clients of mine who were bugging me. I did tell you I was a lawyer, yeah. I wrote down a number of close relatives, because this is being recorded, I don't want to go into, tremendous detail. I wrote down certain talk show hosts. I then wrote down, as an institution, talk show hosts in general. I was involved in a case involving a university in my hometown where I thought that as an institution had treated my client extremely badly. So I wrote down that university's name as a university. I also wrote down one of the deans who I thought had particularly acted badly. So I wrote down the justice system because although justice is one of my deepest values, I didn't think that the justice system that I was part of was giving much justice to people. But what's a principle? Big Book doesn't give examples of a principle, and it's a concept that is very hard. I think, generally speaking, a principle is a fact that you wish were not true, either about yourself or about the world, or about others. So even though I would suggest, the Big Book nowhere suggests you write yourself down, you can certainly write things about yourself. I'm never going to get recovered. I'll always relapse. I'll never be thin. People will never love me. I'll always be alone. I'll always get just so far and then sabotage myself. I mean, things like that. Or, the world is full of suffering. Or, you could write down whatever political issues that bother you at the moment. I mean, one of the things that's true, regardless of where you are on a political basis, is that there's a lot of polarization, certainly in your country, and it's coming to my country as well, that has as its base a lot of fear and anger and sense of catastrophe. Whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, and I'm not going to talk politics here, but there's no question that there's a lot of stuff that's going on that just is weighing on us. And I would write those things down as principles. And individuals who may symbolize those principles or may stand for those principles. Without going into any more detail, those are examples. So you're right, you can write down things about yourself, things about your life. Life sucks and then you die. There's a principle. I'll never be able, I mean, for me, I didn't write this down because I was sort of, but when I graduated from, got my master's in English, I really thought I was going to write the great Canadian novel. I thought I was going to be a great writer, I would be well known, people would be collecting my letters and they'd be printed, and so I wrote my letters in an entertaining style to friends and I was so hurt when my best friend said, well, I throw out your letters when I'm finished with them. So hurt. Well, why aren't you collecting them? Someday they'll be worth a lot of money, And I had this image in my mind. I actually took some time off and tried to write a book. It was awful. I still like the ideas behind it, but boy, I'm not a good writer in terms of fiction. I know how to write a good sentence, but I certainly didn't write a very entertaining book or a very good book. But really my whole life has been spent in admiring creative people and recognizing that I have not an ounce of creativity when it comes to the arts that move me. I am not only not a musician, I'm an anti-musician. My ability to play piano is so bad that I harm the music I play rather than, I can't draw, I can't paint, I can't act, theater moves me. I mean, I, every year lawyers do a charity benefit play for our major theater center where we're directed by professionals, professional sets, but we do all the acting. And I'm always assigned the same kind of role of the weak, enthusiastic person. And I remember I was giving a lift to the director, who's a professional actor and director. He lived close to where I lived at the time. I was giving a lift home. And I was waxing enthusiastically, as I often do, about how much I love theater. And I do. My parents were, well, my father was a semi-professional actor. My mother was not quite at that level, but my dad certainly was. And my grandmother was an actor. So I've loved theater all my life. And I was talking about how I love theater and how I'd love to be an actor. I said at one point, you know, Rob, you know, if I thought I had any talent, I'd probably just quit law and go into acting. And there was a silence in the car. Such a silence. He's such a nice man. He couldn't say anything, you know. So I know I'm not a good actor. One of the principles I could have written down, I didn't have to, but I could have written down is, I suck at everything I love. You know? I mean, I don't suck at, no, that's not true. That's not true. I suck at the arts in terms of creation. I'm a great audience, I can tell you that, but I just can't create. And that could be a principle. I will never be a great novelist. I will never be a good actor or anything of that sort. So those are principles. So you just write them down. And my experience is you write them down in an evening, wake up the next morning, you'll have 5-10 more. You know, because you're taking off the onions and, you know, once you put them down on paper, you may just say, this is on my mind. And that one may go off very quickly because you'll realize, well, I don't care that much about it. But others, you'll be surprised are there. And some will be very deep and someone will be kind of silly. You'll be a little embarrassed that you have them, but they'll be true. I mean, I don't know about you, but I know people who go bananas about parking over the parking line, you know, in parking lots. And certainly you can extrapolate and say anyone who parks, who shouldn't be parking in a handicapped parking thing, those are, you know, unthinking or whatever. So you write that down. In the next column, in point form, and the big book gives you an example on page 65, and someone once counted the words, and the most number of words that are used is 19, and he said, I give my sponsees the luxury of 20 words, maximum of 20 words. You write down in point form, so you got his attention to my wife, told my wife of my mistress, Brown may get my job at the office, 3 points. So you write down using bullets or points why what is in column one is on column one. What bothers you about these things? And look at the stories, the novels, or at least the short stories that could be written about each one of these points. These are just summaries. His attention to my wife. Imagine the parties or the office get-togethers that they would have had where he was just watching Brown pay attention to his wife. At this party, you know, he leaned a little bit forward and, you know what I'm saying? I mean, but all he writes down is his attention to my wife. Told my wife of my mistress. I mean, the gall of doing that. But imagine the story of the mistress and the telling the wife and how it happened and all that. Long story, summarized by this one sentence. Brown may get my job at the office. Imagine all the, I'm having trouble at the office. These are the difficulties I'm having. He's, you know, being so nice to the supervisor and, you know, all these. I mean, may get my job at the office. And so, you know, I give an example of, I had a relationship once in which something happened, or things happened over a 24-hour period. If I were any good at writing, I could probably make an interesting short story about it, but I'm no good at writing. But it was long and complicated. All I had to do was write down that night, because I knew what it was about. And if you take my advice, which is not big book advice, because the big book gives no advice on this issue, you won't have to read that off to anyone else. So it can be your shorthand, just what it means to you. In step five. For Hitler, I don't remember exactly what I wrote down, but it would have been something like 3 points. Responsible for the death of millions of people. got away with it, it could happen again. Now, you could, and books have been written about each one of those topics, and I've read probably every single one of them up until about 15 years ago when I got rid of my whole library. But you can imagine how detailed you could get, but it's only in point form. And this is one of the things that I really sometimes have difficulties with in conveying to sponsees, is that the details aren't important. It's just the general reasons why they're there. You know, you could have, well, I give examples in this thing. I'll give you a spouse. Not enough sex, doesn't help around the house, isn't supportive of me in OA, full of anger, spends too much money on self, doesn't do part in parenting, calls me fat. I mean, each one of those, some of them are specific and some of them are general, doesn't do part in parenting. Imagine the lengthy story that could be there. Here's the person who hurt me as a child. I've written these very generically. An abusive person, sexually or physically. Betrayed my trust, caused me physical pain, caused me emotional pain, continues to make me feel terrible, changed my life completely, made me into a loser. I think of that person all the time. I'm full of hatred. I'm full of self-pity. That covers it. Maybe it doesn't quite cover it for you, but certainly it covers it. People who don't park within the lines. Going from the horrible to the minor. Don't care about others, only interested in themselves, forced me to walk a block. I got angry and yelled at the kids later. Here's a principle, I'll never be thin. Why? I always start off enthusiastically and then fail. I don't have faith in this program, I don't have the right sponsor, I always screw up, I hate being fat. Here's one that ought to resonate with some of you. I did this in AA, why should I do this in OA? AA is much more important to me, AA has much more recovery, I know more than my sponsor does about the 12 steps. I've met people like that. I've written down this principle, people are suffering terribly in this world. This is one that I have to work with a lot. I'm enjoying my life and other people are dying. I'm powerless over the horrible things that are going on. Things have to change for the better. Okay, I mean, these are all, you know, some of these are pretty deep and some of these are kind of a little funny.
What would you say is the difference between that being on that first column or that being in one of your fears?
It will come out into your fears. Don't worry about that. It'll come back into your fears.
Okay.
But everything that's on your mind, including fears, should be there.
Oh,
and people you've harmed and people who've harmed you should be there if you think about them. Okay? If you feel guilty for having done something, you write that person's name down to someone. You write that person's name down. If someone has done something to you and you still think about it, you write that person's name down. Be as open as possible, but don't be overly dramatic. If you've stopped thinking about it, don't worry. Even if some people think you should put it down, don't put it down unless it's something that bothers you. I mean, I've heard people do their step fives and they have not put down something that I think they should have put down. I don't suggest they put it down unless the promises haven't come true for them, and then I'll suggest maybe you should have written this down. Okay, now the next column, this form uses slightly differently. You notice in the third column, page 65, the affects my, and they give you a list of things beside the points, right? So his attention to my wife, sex relations and self-esteem and fear are involved. Told my wife of my mistress, sex relations and self-esteem. Brown may get my job at the office, affects my security and self-esteem and fear. This form has them in sub-columns. So each of the things that the big book lists, the big book says, we listed people, institutions, and principles with whom we were angry, that's column one. We asked ourselves why we were angry, again, why they're on my list, that's column two. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks means money, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries, column two. Then was it our self-esteem, our security, That's pocketbooks, but it's also more than pocketbooks, safety, our ambitions, our personal or sexual license, which had been interfered with. And you can see that each sub-column in these forms is there.
So I'm curious about why pride is not on your list.
Why isn't pride on the list? Because Blaine didn't put it there. I know.
Yeah.
Pride is mentioned once.
Yeah.
And I can only tell you that Blaine didn't put it there, and I treat these forms sacredly as I can. I think pride and ambitions are similar. I don't know. It only happens once. Anyway, so it's just putting check marks in this form. It's tick. In England, you would say ticks.
What's this line with the two arrows on?
The line with the two arrows is where you're going to fold it.
Okay.
It's so deceiving. And it should be taken out, but the guy who created this did this in Adobe so many years ago that he's forgotten how to do it. He has to recreate it. He doesn't have time for it.
And you fold it wide?
I'll show you later. It comes when between column 3 and column 4. So, you know, it's just a matter of checking. You know, Hitler, responsible for the death of millions of people. Does that affect my self-esteem, how I feel about myself? No. Got away with it? Affect my how I feel about myself? No. It could happen again. Affect my self-esteem? Well, it depends. Did I not do something about discrimination or hatred that I could have? Then I would feel bad about myself. It would affect my self-esteem. But if I hadn't, if I'd done everything I should have done, it would not affect my self-esteem. I'll go through the examples that I've given you already. Spouse, not enough sex. I encourage you to go column by column, just because you're concentrating on one issue at a time and not trying to go across. It's not worth it. You can see this example, and I've given examples as well. You ask yourself, what is self-esteem? How good I feel about myself? What is pocketbooks or security? It's how safe I feel, both financially and in other ways. What is ambitions? It's what I want out of life. Almost always your ambitions will be thwarted. There will be something hampering your ambitions, otherwise they wouldn't be resentments. If a resentment is, I want something to have happened that didn't happen, or I want something not to have happened that did happen, clearly your ambitions are being thwarted. Wish I could think of the right word. Anyone want to come up with a synonym?
Hampered.
Well, crossed. They're being crossed. So you go through this list, and you'll end up with a bunch of check marks. Okay? So we've got self-esteem, how I feel about myself, security pocketbooks, how safe I feel, both in general ways and generally in safety. Ambitions, what I want out of life, personal relations, sex relations, and sex in 1939 was not simply, we think of it as physical. These days it wasn't just physical, it was a matter of attraction. You could make love to a person by sending flowers, which is a little different from the way we use the words now. We would call that wooing, I guess, or maybe I would have called that wooing when I was growing up. But I'm just saying that sex now has this physical concept. In 1939, it was a much broader term, meaning relationships in which there was attraction. So sexual relations included sexual relations as we now use the word, but it didn't necessarily. And whether fear was involved. And you go through and you end up with checks, tick marks. Check, check, no check, no check, 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 no check, all the way down. For every single cause that's in column 2, you would look at that cause. So, for instance, for Mr. Brown, his attention to my wife, you would check sex relations and you check self-esteem. Personally, I would have checked ambitions as well. Told my wife of my my mistress, affects self-esteem, fear, sex relations, I would have put down ambitions as well. And I would put down personal relations, affects his personal relations as well. I personally would have, but this gentleman, obviously it's a man, would not have. Brown may get my job at the office, affects my sense of security and my self-esteem, and involves fear. So do you see how it's done?
Yeah.
Any questions? Yeah.
I'm trying to think about the parking over the line.
Parking over the line. I'll give you examples for that. Do you want that?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't care about others. Affects, for me, ambitions and fear. Fear because I may not get a parking spot. Only interest in themselves affects ambitions and fear. Force me to walk a block affects self-esteem. I don't deserve to walk a block. Affect my ambitions and fear. I got angry and yelled at my kids later affects my self-esteem, affects my ambitions, affects my personal relations, and affects my fear. That help? There's no magic to this. There's no science to this. It's whatever makes sense to you now. Quick question.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think a good litmus test for resentment is, do you eat over it?
That's certainly one, I don't know if you heard that, but one litmus test for resentment is it something that you have found yourself eating over? Absolutely, that should be in there. But there may be other resentments that you don't find yourself eating over, but if you eat over it, it's a resentment. Forget about whether you're angry about it, if it causes you such stress. If you go to the oabigbook.org info and you download the examples, you'll see that the person who hurt me as a child, almost everything, every column for every one of the causes is ticked off, is checked off. Because, of course, it was a life-changing experience. Oh, experience is the wrong word, assault. I don't want to spend much more time on that. I mean, there's stuff that I've written on that you have, and there's also examples that you can download. Sometimes there will be a few check marks, sometimes there will be a lot. Just depends on the incident and on what you've written down. But the big book says on page 65, and I'm going to conclude, we'll take a break very, very shortly. I'm going to be running out of time. The big book says about this, we're at the bottom, page 65, we went back through our lives, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent, we're on page 66 now, was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. So you can see, you can put down people you've harmed. And you feel remorse about that, even though that wouldn't be someone you're angry at. It's something that makes you feel bad. It's a resentment. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumphs were short-lived. Have you ever had to leave a room because someone entered it? I have. You know, some guy, he's a politician. My dad was a politician. He made horrible, horrible comments about my father. And I was in a hotel far away from Winnipeg, and he walked in. I want to go up to him and say, my name is Inigo Montoya. You insulted my father, prepared to die, but I didn't. I left the room. I'm glad there are some fans of the Princess Bride here, even though I don't know how to pronounce
Inigo.
Inigo Montoya, you killed my father, prepared to die. And then they go on. They say, it is plain. And of course, I'll show him, I'll eat, is certainly a common refrain I had in my life. It is plain, I've had experience with that. I don't have time. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander, waste the hours that might have been worthwhile? That's true for all of us. We're wasting time if we live in the past, if we live in the what-ifs and the if-onlys. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found it's fatal. So other people can have it and it's not going to kill them. But we can't, because it's going to kill us. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit, obscured by calamity, by pomp, and by worship of other things. And this is a clear example. We're looking at all these check marks. Everything about ourselves has been thwarted, crossed. We don't feel good about ourselves. We feel unsafe, insecure. Everything we want out of life is not happening. Our ambitions, our personal relationships are screwed up. Our sexual relationships are affected. And we're full of fear. No wonder we can't remember not to eat that ice cream. No wonder our minds are just so confused. It's like the shadow has power to cloud people's minds. Well, that goes back too long. Who has the power to cloud people's minds? The shadow does. Pardon me, I guess I haven't seen the movie, but is it that? Is it as good as the play, as the radio things?
If you like
okay.
90s
okay.
superhero movies, yeah.
Okay. So your mind is clouded. No wonder. You see these check marks, and you see how it's killing you. Because you're full of... You know, and this whole frustration. And the big book says the insanity of alcohol returns, we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we have to be free of anger. I don't think the big book means we can't be angry, we have to be free of it. The grouch and the brainstorm, and Bill translates that in As Bill Sees It, which is a great meditation book, is available behind where Paul is. The grouch and the sudden rage were not for us. They are the dubious luxury of normal men. But for alcoholics, these things are poison. This dubious luxury is another one of those wonderful phrases that that Big Book has. Normal people can feel anger, and they don't eat over it, and they don't drink over it. But for us, the resentments that we feel, the frustrations of our lives, are things that cause us to forget that we can't eat that stuff, or we can't indulge in this stuff. And they are the reasons that our minds cannot control our eating. And that we keep going back, that we have these mental obsessions. Okay, it's about 11 minutes to 3, according to my watch. Can we come back at 3?